it's unbelievable how after so many years we recovered democracy in South America, and now we still see civic space shrinking in many countries. So it was there, but democracy is a treasure that we have to take care of every day because it's fragile. We, citizens, we have a huge responsibility in making those that hold powers accountable and in being accountable ourselves.
Welcome to Voices of Open Government, a show from the Open Government Partnership, where we explore how to make our democracies more transparent, inclusive, participatory, and accountable. In this season, we're exploring some of the big issues facing democracy by talking to the reformers, activists, journalists, and citizens who are on the ground right now in the middle of the fight. I'm your host, Jose Perez. Let's get started. Civil society organizations play an important role in making sure government decisions are informed by the needs of their citizens. And this is why strengthening civil society and citizen participation is of utmost importance. Annabel Cruz has spent 3 decades doing that work. She is the founder of the Communication and Development Institute, where she works on research, training, and capacity building in Latin America and worldwide. In the last episode of Voices of Open Government, Annabel tells us how her experience fleeing her home country of Uruguay as a political refugee inspired her to work on democratic initiatives and why strengthening civil society is crucial in our current political climate.
Born in Uruguay within a family of Italian immigrants. So I think I grew up in a family, and even my ancestors, my own life, and those of my descendants, has been marked, and it is marked by a sort of search of a world without borders. Uruguay was a very special country. It was known a very small country in the south of South America, in between two giants, Brazil and Argentina, and known as the Switzerland of the Americas. And it was a country with rights to many things very early. Women had right to vote very early, one of the first countries in the world for women to get divorced, rights to healthcare systems. So I grew up in that country and it began to deteriorate. So we suffered, as many countries in Latin America, finally, a very dark period of dictatorship in the 70s and 80s. And it was also the same for Argentina, for Brazil, for Chile, for Paraguay, many countries in South America. We had to live almost more than one decade with military regimes, and all liberties and freedoms were banned. So that was my option at that moment, student movements, democracy movements, and it has been sort of evolving with all these years into different options that bring that kind of struggle for liberty and struggle for freedoms, freedom of expression, freedom of association. So that's part of the history.
I think that's really important, right? As we talk in OGP about the difference between an open society and a closed society, I think, you know, military regimes in Latin America in the 70s and 80s is a great representation. And if we think about it, I mean, that was not too long ago, right? We still live with a lot of consequences.
Yes.
Exactly. Would you mind telling me a few examples of what living in a closed society was for you?
Well, in our countries, there were political prisoners, students that were in jail, thousands of people that disappeared in Uruguay and in Argentina. So it was very hard times and very difficult times. And, you know, it's unbelievable how after so many years, then We recovered democracy. We recovered democracy in South America. Chile was the last one in 1990. And now, after so many years of democracy, we still see threats to democracy. We still see civic space shrinking in many countries. We still witness political prisoners in Nicaragua. 222 political prisoners were expelled from Nicaragua and they were banned of their nationality. But democracy is a treasure that we have to take care of every day because it's fragile. And if we do not participate and take care of democracy and protect we, citizens, we have a huge responsibility in making those that hold powers accountable and in being accountable ourselves.
Because of the dictatorship in Uruguay, Annabelle had to leave her country. She lived in Sweden as a political refugee for a decade.
Sweden was one of the countries that showed enormous solidarity with the political refugees in Latin America. So many, many hundreds from Chile, from Uruguay, from Argentina emigrated and sought political asylum in Sweden. It was a decade of learning. I was very young at that moment, so to come to countries that were so different. Because now, in some way, countries are closer. But some 30, 40 years ago, you can't imagine the difference between going from Uruguay to Sweden. We didn't know so much about it. I mean, there was not this flow of information on social media that connects people. We didn't have so much information about other countries, and Sweden and the Nordic countries seemed to be very far. So it was a decade of learning, of solidarity, of learning how far away people can be so helpful and also make the case for democracy at that moment. Europe was very helpful also. Solidarity in Europe was one of the things that we received and that contribute in some way to that wave of solidarity that help us to recover democracy. So I have fond, both painful and fond memories of those years.
In 1985, once the dictatorship was over, Annabelle returned to Uruguay. She then began thinking how she could contribute to democracy in Uruguay, and later on, to the entire region of Latin America.
We are part of our own history, and I think my years at the beginning in Latin America and then the option and to see Sweden and to see the advances of democracy in Sweden and to come back to Uruguay when it was allowed, I think that's something that marks you for the rest of your life. So, of course, I think it is in the background of the options of promoting more civic participation and understanding that it was not only to cast a vote every 4 or 5 years, but to protect democracy every day as a responsibility of all of us citizens. So when I came back from Sweden to Uruguay, we founded, together with a group of colleagues, the organization where I still work today, the Communication and Development Institute, to promote democracy, to strengthen, and it's in the mission of this, of the organization, and it was founded 36 years ago, and it's still valid, to strengthen civic voices and to strengthen civil society. So generic as it sounds, I mean, it has been valid in the 90s and at the beginning of this century, and it's more valid than ever right now. So it takes different forms, this need for organizations, for gatherings of citizens to become stronger. After this first period, we went out to more regional and international networking, understanding that it's very, that stronger voice and a louder voice give us more possibilities of better results for democracy.
Annabelle's grassroots efforts eventually led her to spearhead big international organizations such as Civicus, where she was the chair twice. Civicus is a global alliance dedicated to strengthening citizen action and civil society around the world.
I love that organization. It has been part, and it's still part of my life. And when I stepped down from the board, I wrote a short piece about my 25 years journey with Civicus, and all these pieces come together. It's not a coincidence that what Civic did in the 90s or at the beginning of this century or is doing now. I mean, that necessary evolution of the concepts and how Civicus, for instance, tried to define what it was civil society, to understand the forms and to understand the concept in order, knowing better, you can, of course, contribute better to its strength and its promotion. So it has been, it still is, a wonderful journey.
At the time of this recording, Annabelle is a civil society co-chair of the OGP steering committee.
OGP has the beauty that doesn't have any other international organizations, coalitions of governments and civil society, that it has given us seat on the table, space for civil society at local level, at national level, in the international governance. And that seat has been, during all these years, been filled with more substance, with presence, with real commitment. I think that OGP concentrated many of the efforts and many of the things I have been working for and fighting for in many years of my life. Working together, civil society and governments, transparency to accountability, the real meaning of accountability, a dynamic accountability, which is not that organizations present their financial accounts, but much more than that. So OGP is a wonderful organization and has been really a pillar these years, this first decade, and I hope it will be even stronger in the next decade.
You're co-chairing the Open Government Partnership with the government of Estonia, which speaks to this collaboration between government and civil society, not only co-creating action plans nationally, but also steering the partnership globally in a direction that serves democracy and serves citizens everywhere, which I think is really interesting. But I feel like Estonia and Uruguay, your home country, share a lot of similarities. They're both very small, both have very important history when it comes to, you know, very strong regimes going through that transition between closed and open societies, even though they're thousands of miles apart. But do you agree that there are a few parallels between Uruguay and Estonia that others in the partnership can learn from, both the country and the reformers in them?
Yeah, absolutely. And it has really been wonderful to discover in practice those similarities and those aspects that we share in our histories and even our personality. As I said, I lived in Sweden for 10 years. Estonia is half an hour flight from Sweden. You can even take a boat. I never related that Estonia with Uruguay. And it was first now when it had the possibility of co-chairing the partnership with the government of Estonia. I have visited Estonia a couple of times. To working with them is a joy. It's really unbelievable. A small country, we're also a small country. We always put our less fight which one is smaller than the other, and we are only 3 million inhabitants, and they are, I think, less than that. And a very organized, systematic country, very effective. It has been wonderful to, with the minister, with Taimar as co-chairs, and I really look forward to even to more contact and avenues of collaboration.
The OGP Summit, taking place in September, will gather reformers in government, civil society, and other sectors. it will be an opportunity to think of ways to open up our governments in more than 70 countries and 100 local jurisdictions.
One of the things that I want from the summit, and it's part of my agenda as co-chair, is that it's a moment, a space for civil society to come together and to get stronger as well. I resourced accountable, stronger civil society is one of my advocacy lines as co-chair within OGP and wherever I go and wherever I work. So I hope that civil society participation is high, that many delegates from civil society and different organizations from all over the world can come to Estonia. So I hope that civil society will be able to have resources to go to Estonia. This is also a shout out to funders, to governments, to support civil society for their journey to Estonia, because it's going to be a moment of change, I'm sure. It's the launching of the new strategy. It's the sort of official beginning of a new decade for OGP.
This year, OGP is launching a 5-year strategy in hopes to better serve our community. The new strategy includes building stronger partnerships as well as making open government the norm through sustained results in key policy areas.
The summit in Estonia can be a very good moment to realize and to make reality some of the goals that are being defined by the new strategy. And I hope that after that, it's going to be before and after Estonia in terms of civic participation and implementation of the new strategy of OGP. For example, we have been hearing that open government has to be the norm in all levels of government. That's something that has been promoted by many of those that contribute, that came to the focus group, to the discussions of the strategy. How can we do that? And I think that if we are able to bring a broad movement, a diverse movement of reformers to Estonia, that's a very good start.
For Annabelle, we must not only demand accountability from governments. If we truly want to open our societies, accountability has to be reciprocal. Civil society organizations must also be open and transparent.
The point is that organizations and that we as advocates for civil society try to improve all the time our own practices, try to become better and stronger as organization and as people that work within organization. So that's why civil society organization must be responsible, must be proactive, must be accountable, must lead by example, must practice what we preach. If organizations want to promote social accountability and to demand accountability to those that hold power, we have to be accountable ourselves. We have to be transparent. We have to be democratic. We have to also learn to shift power. And we also have to be accountable, not to those that give us it, which is okay, to be accountable to those that provide resources or to the government that regulates our activity, but to our stakeholders, to the people we work with, to the people that we say we represent. That's the most important part. And that often organizations either forget that part or do not have time or resources. If we are transparent, if we are accountable in terms of our results, in terms of our policies, in terms of the commitments we make to our stakeholders and to the people we work with, then we will be stronger to demand accountability from other people. And that's one of the reasons why a group of networks from around the world, we have came together to adopt the global standard for CSO accountability, which is not, you know, the due diligence. Do you have the audit report on your web page or are you? No, it's much more than that. It's commitment and it's dynamic. So, but the global standard talks about commitments and how you can improve your practice in order to fulfill those commitments. But it's a permanent journey.
As Annabelle noted, civil society must have the resources and capacity to push the open government agenda forward. Empowering organizations must be at the heart of our mission.
This has to be something done in collaboration by governments, by funders, by donors, by international organizations, by international NGOs, and by local NGOs. So we have to agree in that if organizations are empowered in terms of resources, in terms of decisions, in terms of capacity building, and organizations know there is a lot of expertise in the Global South. There is a lot of experience. There is a lot of genuine indigenous knowledge that we have. So this aid system or this collaboration system has to be based on equality, on solidarity, but still civil society is, I don't want to say in a weaker position, but civil society doesn't have the same possibilities that states have. I have heard many times donors that you have to have a sustainability plan. Our sustainability plan is that we have always to be thinking in fundraising and see where and how we are going to have the resources to fulfill our mission. And that's a challenge. That's very difficult. And sometimes civil society organizations cannot participate in international governance or in spaces like the one that OGP provides because of resources, because the organizations are fighting for their own subsistence, for trying to get to the end of the month. So they cannot go to meetings convened by government to present proposals. They don't have time. They don't have human resources to do that. So resources is a real challenge for civil society in order to participate in local and in national and international governance.
Civil society organizations have a key role to play in defending democracy in their communities. That is why it is important to fight against efforts by authoritarian and populist leaders who restrict space for civil society, spread disinformation online, and attack human rights.
There is a responsibility in terms of monitoring rights and monitoring civic space, I mean, too. And that can be done independently by civil society much better than other forces, to say, by governments. So to monitor civic space, and so we know what's happening in El Salvador, it's very important to, with some, based on some principles, counteracting fake news and promoting a flow of information that can help to trust, because if you want to install and to go back to trust, you have to go back to truth first. So I think that this global and regional monitoring of civic spaces is very important, and to disseminate what is happening. That is important because that knowledge can be a source of action then for bodies specialized in human rights, for regional organizations, for global organizations. So there is an important role for civil society as a defender of the principles of democracy in each country. Civil society organizations can be and should be fulfilling their missions independently without the need to depend on resources from a certain government. It's very difficult for an organization that receives funding from their own governments then to criticize. I have seen it, many examples. So, in that sense, to promote independent funding for civil society to fulfill these watchdog roles and defender of democracy is crucial. Civic space is the space both virtually and physically where organizations and people can claim their rights and realize their rights to freedom of expression, freedom of association, freedom of assembly. If we don't have an open civic space and if we cannot act in open societies, then everything that OGP can do will not be able to do. The mission of OGP is only realizable if civic space is open, both virtually and physically.
Just one last question. What is your hope for democracy and open government in the future? Now, we've talked about what it is now, the current state of it now, what it was in the past. What do you hope for the future?
Well, I hope that we can in maybe in 10 years, I will be, I don't know if I'm going to be around in 10 years, but I would like to see that we do not talk about this backsliding of democracy, but that democracy is flourishing and stronger in different countries and around the world, measured by these expressions of public participations, advocacy in public policies, collaboration between governments and civil society organizations. So, and we have a lot of work to do these 10 years if we want to come to such a, to that reality.
Talking to Annabelle reminded me how important it is not to only promote, but also support civil society organizations. As she noted, the relationship between government and its citizens must be reciprocal, and civil society organizations can only do their best if they are properly resourced. I hope this episode inspired you to think about ways in which you can support them. I hope you can join us in Estonia for the OGP Global Summit on September 6 and 7. You can find more about it on our website at ogpsummit.org. This is the last episode of our season, so thank you all for joining us in this journey. While we're on break, we invite you to listen back to episodes you might have missed. And please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review our show wherever you listen. For the latest updates on open government, you can follow OGP on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Before we go, we'd like to thank OGP and our producers at Human Group Media for making this podcast possible.